for Thursday, August 10, 2006, this is Free Speech Radio News. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. UK officials say they've foiled an alleged terror ring. We'll hear from the UK in Capitol Hill. We'll go to Oaxaca City, where the fight to oust the state's governor continues. And after yet another setback, the families of the women killed in Juarez continue their struggle for justice. We'll bring you those stories and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. Israeli troops have taken control of the Lebanese town of Marjaoun, 5 miles north of the border. Plans for a major invasion lasting up to 2 months, approved by Israel's security cabinet yesterday, were reportedly put on hold following conversations between the Israeli prime minister and the U.S. Secretary of State. Israeli soldiers today consolidated strategic positions in southern Lebanon and warned of new attacks on Beirut and the north of the country. Khalid Sid Mohan reports from the northern city of Tripoli.
At around noon today, Israeli army airplanes dropped leaflets in a town just south of Tripoli to warn people it would strike any vehicle bigger than a car traveling all along the road. This means the only coastal road spared by the Israeli army aircraft promises to be free of any vehicles from this evening until tomorrow morning, further strangling the country already suffering from a ground, air, and sea embargo for nearly 1 month. If the Sunni population of the northern city of Tripoli was quite indifferent to the war sparkled in the south, they are now seriously worrying about a possible extension of the conflict into their region. Today's cafe conversation were all focused on the Hezbollah's leader, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's speech yesterday, in which he promised to turn their precious land of the south into a graveyard for occupying Zionists. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Khalid Sid Mohan in Troublos in Tripoli, Lebanon.
Heavy fighting broke out today between the Sri Lankan government forces and the Tamil Tiger rebels over a key irrigation reservoir in the eastern part of the island. Just 2 days ago, both sides claimed credit for ending the 3-week blockade of water supplies to thousands of acres of paddy fields. Panea Monica Vasagam reports from Sri Lanka.
The truce monitors termed the ongoing escalation of hostilities in Sri Lanka as a low-intensity war, which has resulted in severe casualties on both the combatants and the civilians. The government said today the rebels first fired artillery on the troops to regain control of Mavilaru Dam that the forces claim is under their control. But the Tamil Tigers say that the troops started an offensive in two fronts today to take control of Mavilaru, which is in their control. Government said 5 soldiers were killed and 41 injured by the mortar and artillery fire from the rebels. A rebel spokesman said they lost 10 fighters and another 20 were wounded in today's fighting. Rebels say 50 civilians have been killed and another 200 were wounded and thousands have been forced to flee their homes. David Vinati is the communication coordinator of the International Committee of Red Cross.
We have been informed that there are many displaced moving to the south. We don't know the number because we couldn't reach the area. We don't know the situation really. We don't know in which condition they are working.
The government denied the charges. It said the troops were targeting the rebels' artillery positions and doesn't know about the displacement of civilians. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ponnaiah Manikavasagam in Bavuniya, Sri Lanka.
Nigeria's House of Representatives has issued a report slamming Chevron for tax evasion. Sema Lakoya reports from Lagos.
The American energy giant has been asked to pay $492 million in back taxes to the Nigerian government. The report released early this week by Nigeria's lower house of Congress is the result of a broad investigation into allegations of tax evasion, fraud, and corruption made against Chevron. The report says the company inflated its tax returns to the government and overstated the cost of its operation in order to evade taxes. The House must still debate and adopt measures before recommendations made in the report could come into effect. Chevron has in the meantime denied that it evaded tax. The company said it was reviewing the report and will soon issue its official position on the matter. Multinational companies operating in Nigeria have in the past been accused of shortchanging the country of tens of millions of dollars through tax evasion. Only last year, the U.S. company Halliburton was found to have made illicit payments to Nigerian tax officials to enable it secure favorable tax cuts. for Free Speech Radio News. This is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
High school students in Chile are growing restless again, just months after massive mobilizations demanding reforms to the country's education system. FSRN's Jorge Garretón reports from Santiago.
High school students are meeting today with the new Minister of Education to let her know of their dissatisfaction with the slow pace of resolving their demands. The Presidential Education Commission was formed after the students carried out intense street demonstrations in April and May. The commission is expected to hand the government a reforms package that can be later be sent to Congress to legislate changes to the Education Act. Students want a reform to the Education Act that puts an end to the educational system as a for-profit institution and to transform it into a truly public system. On Tuesday, high school students took to the streets of Santiago, demanding that authorities respond to their demands promptly. But the demonstration turned violent when the students began pelting the district's educational offices with rocks. Students then fought police, who made some 160 arrests. The new education minister is telling the students they must be patient, saying reforms to the system do not happen in 2 or 3 months. The students' assembly will meet tomorrow to determine their future actions. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
UK officials announced that an anti-terrorism sting uncovered a multiple commercial plane bombing plot that would target flights between the UK and the US. The development caused delays at airports on both sides of the Atlantic as security measures increase. Helen Kelly reports from London.
Homes and businesses across England are being searched and 21 people questioned tonight after an alleged terror plot to blow up British planes in mid-air was disrupted. It is thought the group planned to detonate liquid explosive devices smuggled in hand luggage in a series of simultaneous attacks. As many as 10 planes were thought to be targeted, including 3 US aircraft. The suspects were rounded up in pre-dawn raids in London, High Wycombe, Buckinghamshire and Birmingham after a covert investigation that included US security authorities. British Home Secretary John Reid.
The police, acting with the security service MI5, are investigating an alleged plot to bring down a number of aircraft through mid-flight explosions, causing a considerable loss of life.
Home Secretary Reid said police were confident the main players have now been accounted for, but would remain on high alert for the immediate future.
We are involved in a long, wide and deep struggle against very evil people. This is not a case of one civilization against another, one religion against another.
It is believed the overnight arrests were made not because an attack was likely to happen today, but for other intelligence reasons, which meant quick action was needed. All inbound flights to Heathrow and all short-haul flights to and from UK airports remain cancelled this evening. Helen Kelly, reporting from London for Free Speech Radio News.
The foiled terror plot has caused concern on the other side of the Atlantic as well. FSRN's Selina Masuta reports on Washington's reaction.
If you're planning to fly, be at the airport earlier than usual and don't carry on board any beverages and other liquids like hair gels, toothpaste, and lotions. Starting Thursday, the Transportation Security Administration adopted extra security measures. The move is in response to the arrest of 21 people in the UK. They're allegedly involved in plotting to blow up in mid-flight planes heading from the UK to the US. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff announced that the plot involved a liquid chemical device. There will be other security measures implemented, says Chertoff.
United States Customs and Border Protection will be increasing enforcement efforts in the international arrival areas, including the use of advanced targeting tools, special response teams, including baggage and aircraft search teams, baggage X-ray equipment, specially trained canine units, and explosive detection technology. These measures, again, will be constantly evaluated and updated as circumstances warrant.
Exceptions to the no liquid rule include baby formula, breast milk, or juice if a baby or small child is traveling. Also, prescription medicine with a name that matches the passenger's ticket, and insulin and essential other non-prescription medicines will be allowed. No arrests have been made in the United States, and no evidence points to a bombing plan organized in the United States. Two U.S. counterterrorism officials told the Associated Press that United, American, and Continental Airlines were targets. British airport officials are allowing very little to be carried onto any British aircraft. Flights to Heathrow have been suspended, and other British flights are facing severe delays. New security measures are being implemented by both Britain and the U.S. Britain raised their threat level to critical. The U.S. issued a code red for commercial flights between the U.K. and U.S. Furthermore, the Department of Homeland Security elevated the country to a code yellow. While on vacation, Bush issued a statement calling the threat of terrorism real and that necessary steps must be taken to counteract al-Qaeda-like terrorism.
This nation is at war with Islamic fascists who will use any means to destroy those of us who love freedom.
Bush's declaration of war on Islamic fascists worries people like Mahdi Bray, executive director of the Muslim American Society Freedom Foundation. Bray's organization is coordinating marches this Saturday throughout the country to protest Israel's military actions against Palestine and Lebanon, as well as U.S. involvement in the conflicts. Bray warns that the Bush administration will use the bombing plot for political gain and to divert attention from criticism that the Bush administration faces because of their involvement in the Middle East.
This is an administration that has used the fear factor for political gain, especially around the area of terrorism. Karl Rove made it very, very clear to Republican candidates when they were running for office that this is something that they could run on. The fear of terrorism, you know, versus the presentation of being strong in national security. So these are the things that I think that the administration has used for political advantage and opportunism, and I don't think they've stopped this behavior.
The anti-war march is also being organized by ANSWER and the National Council on Arab Americans. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Selena Masuta.
New separate reports issued by human rights watchdogs B'Tselem and the Palestinian Monitoring Group reveal that between 151 and 163 people were killed in the Gaza Strip in July. That's the deadliest month on record in nearly 2 years. Israel continued its attacks by firing missiles into Gaza today, as UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said that the events in Lebanon should not sidetrack the crisis in the occupied territories. Annan added that the killing of Gaza's civilians was unjustifiable. As FSRN's Rami Al-Maghari reports from Rafah, Israel has targeted rural civilian areas.
Israeli army on August 2nd invaded the Shoka village east of Rafah city. 17 people were killed, including children. 50 others were wounded, including children. In addition, the village infrastructure suffered a great deal of destruction. The Shoka is inhabited by 14,000 Palestinian residents. The majority are closely connected, mainly as relatives. Mayor of the village, Mansour Breka.
This is a rural area where families are bound by tribal connections. No strangers can enter at nighttime. Therefore, we are refuting the Israeli side's allegations that the area is used for launching rockets. The farmers here are taking care to their living earnings, as they prevent any moves, whether by the resistance forces or the thieves or alike.
FSRN asked Mayor Mansour about the amount of destruction.
700 dunams, or 700 square kilometers, of greenhouses have been destroyed completely. 58 houses have also been completely devastated in the first stage, as children, women, and the ailing have been evacuated to safe shelters at the UNRWA local schools. More than 175 pottery and livestock houses have also been damaged. The whole infrastructure has been totally destroyed.
26-year-old local farmer Tawfiq Al-Barakat described what he has lost in the August 2nd attack.
As for the destruction I have been inflicted, 2 dunams of greenhouses plus 4 other dunams of electronically irrigated farm of garlic plus 9 sheep and 2,000 bricks destroyed by the tanks as well as a barbed wire fence around my land.
72 Palestinians of those wounded during the Israeli raids on Gaza have had their limbs cut. This has raised doubts by the Palestinian side about possible use of illegal weapons. Khaled Radi, spokesman of the Palestinian Health Ministry.
We absolutely speculate that what has been used against our people are weapons containing acid, chemical, sulfuric, shrapnel, and flecheted substances that have left some horrible features on the dead and wounded.
Gracila Lopez, acting head of the subdelegation at the International Committee of the Red Cross, is aware of the accusations about the use of illegal weapons, but is unable to confirm this.
We are in contact with hospitals and, of course, with the Palestinian Red Crescent Society working in the medical field. And it is of our concern to follow up on these allegations of the use of new types of weapons. At this moment, we cannot confirm the use of any particular type of new weapon. We are not in a position to do so or to monitor the type of weapon being used, but we are following the situation and take these allegations seriously.
The International Red Cross and the UN are investigating the use of illegal weapons. For Rafa Soran, this is Rami Almigari reporting from Gaza.
Political instability continues to reign in Mexico as the Federal Electoral Tribunal carries on its partial recount of presidential votes. In Oaxaca, the climate of violence has left three people dead, armed attacks on the office of the biggest-selling newspaper, and the arrest of social leaders, all in less than 48 hours. Yet, as FSRN's Vladimir Flores reports, despite the repression, a massive social movement continues to hold protests demanding the immediate resignation of the state's governor.
A broad citizens' movement in Oaxaca has been demanding the resignation of Governor Ulises Ruiz for more than 2 months, saying the state government is authoritarian and corrupt. The movement to oust the governor has been made up of a cross-section of Oaxacan society and gained momentum when the government launched a crackdown on thousands of striking public school teachers. Civil society organizations, teachers, farmers, activists, indigenous groups, and individual citizens have formed the so-called Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca, or APO in Spanish, to serve as an alternative government structure. Members of the APO have taken over and blockaded every significant state government building in the state capital. On August 1st, thousands of women affiliated with the APO took over the state-run television and radio station. After marching through the city center, banging on pots and pans, the women's demonstration took a spontaneous turn. Anna, a woman who participated in the takeover, explains her reasons for occupying the state-run TV station.
These offices, which have as their slogan the Channel of Oaxacans, were lying, because it was the channel of the PRI-run government. The information wasn't true. They were lying. So this produced a frustration within the populace, as if they were even being made fun of, which is when we women decided to take over the station. It wasn't planned at first, but the general discontent is that people were already fed up. We decided in that moment to come here.
The women continue to occupy the TV and radio station. They broadcast independently produced videos and anti-government programming. Many of the women are nervous that authorities will launch a violent operation to take back the studios. The women interviewed for this report only identified themselves by their first name or asked not to be named. Although the occupation of the airways could be considered federal crimes, many women are contributing work, money, or food to the protesters there. This elderly woman came from a outlying community with her daughter to serve hot coffee to people at the station.
All of the outsiders who come here are realizing what is happening here in Oaxaca. That's why we're here now, rain or shine, to show that we are supporting Oaxaca.
The conflict in Oaxaca has reached the proportion of a popular rebellion due to the refusal of governor to resign and the lack of intervention from the federal government. Gisela, a middle school teacher who is also a member of the APO, says that even though the federal and state government are from different political parties, the federal government does not see a benefit to intervening in the crisis.
Pues simplemente porque es el mismo sistema. Y no es posible para ellos que el pueblo levante la voz.
Simply because it is the same system. For them, it's not possible for the people to rise up and impose their own will. We know that at the national level, there was an electoral fraud. At the national level, there's a situation that is preventing the government from maintaining control in many places, but especially in Oaxaca. Now there are protest encampments in Mexico City, too. There are many things. The country is really a disaster. They can't control it. So the fact that in one state the people have risen up to overthrow a governor, for them, it's no good, because where does that leave their authority?
The situation in Oaxaca shows no signs of letting up, and spontaneous protests have become a regular occurrence. For FSRM, Vladimir Flores in Oaxaca.
Nepal's government and the Maoists both say they're striving for peace. After events earlier this week jeopardized that peace process, Paburam Bhattarai, second in charge in the Maoist hierarchy, stated that their peace dialogue with the government had reached the verge of collapse. His outburst stemmed from Nepal's premier Girja Prasad Koirala's remark that even the king should be given some freedom within a democracy. As FSRN's PC Dubey reports, the contradictions displayed by both sides have the potential to jeopardize all prospects for peace.
The Maoist remark triggered panic among masses. Nepal's global image had already nosedived with the failure of the UN team to persuade the government and Maoists to reach consensus over the disarmament of Maoist guerrillas. Maoists refused to disarm unless the Nepal army disarmed too. However, yesterday both the government and Maoists tried to salvage the peace process. They turned to the UN for help. Ironically, the two sides sent their own letters, but they said the same thing. Analysts fear Nepal's Koirala has succumbed to the Maoist pressures and agreed that Maoists would not disarm. The letter said that their arms will remain under the UN-appointed civilian monitors until the voters go to the polls to draft a new constitution. Pramod Bihari Singh is a social activist heading Indo-Nepal Friendship Association, INFA, engaged in institutionalization of democracy in Nepal. He believes yesterday's face-saving step to revitalize the ongoing peace dialogue is a farce.
Again, there is talk that Maoists should relinquish arms, but in no case would they give up arms. It is simply an imagination. Political parties don't have the guts to make them relinquish arms. The situation is getting bleaker. We are again inching towards civil war, which would be much more disastrous than the past one.
Ashok Kumar, a media analyst specializing in Maoist issue, disagrees. He does not rule out a second spell of Maoist violence. Maoists want to fight for more rights.
Maoists are aware the collapse of peace dialogue won't be favorable for them too. But their gripe is that they fought for a decade and joined the battle for democracy and yet gained nothing. So they feel betrayed.
Singh, however, affirms democracy would not have been restored if US and India had not pressured the king. Singh believes Maoist participation would be destructive for the democracy.
If Maoists joined the government, then there would be the government of Maoists alone. Political parties would perish. Maoists are an organization of anarchy. They would only breed troubles for common people.
But Kumar feels the ousting of Maoists from power would not benefit the country. Neither political parties, the army, nor the king trust each other. So the chance to marginalize the Maoist is bleak. Thus, a civil war could evolve with foreign intervention, but a puppet regime in saddle could breed new sorts of political and economic crisis. Kumar strongly prescribes integration of Maoists in the country's polity. From Kathmandu, I am PC Dubey for Free Speech Radio News.
More than 400 women have been raped and murdered in northern Mexico since 1993. Their bodies left in the desert's border region just south of El Paso, Texas. This summer, the Mexican government returned 14 cases it has been investigating back to the state of Chihuahua.
According to officials, there is no evidence to substantiate a federal crime. As FSRN's Leslie Clark reports, the families of the murdered and missing women in Ciudad Juarez are infuriated as they face yet another setback in their mission for justice.
Cipriana Jurado works with 25 families of victims in Juarez, Chihuahua. Jurado is with the Centro de Investigación y Solidaridad Obrera, or CISO. She says the families understand that the Mexican government's decision will further delay answers about the murder and disappearance of their loved ones.
The families are angry and frustrated. They feel that there's been a lot of time lost in investigating the crimes against their daughters. And now the government is returning the cases to the Chihuahua Attorney General.
With the federal government's position that resolving the femicides is a matter for the state of Chihuahua, the onus is on the state's attorney general. CISO is prepared to monitor the AG's investigations.
Well, with the new attorney general, there have been some advances in some cases. The problem is, in other cases, there hasn't been any advancement. What we are doing is demanding a serious investigation.
Overall, Amnesty International reports very little progress by state authorities, according to spokesman Eric Olson.
The state and local authorities have so utterly failed in their obligations. The levels of corruption and ineptitude and criminal negligence are so evident that we have said the federal government has a moral and a legal responsibility to intervene and assist in and participate in the investigation and prosecution of these cases.
While the investigations stall, the killings are escalating. In only the first 5 months of this year, 23 murders have already been reported. That's approximately the same number of murders committed in all of 2004. There is some optimism that recent resolutions approved by the U.S. Congress will motivate Mexican authorities to bring an end to the murders. This spring, the U.S. House and Senate approved identical resolutions urging U.S. involvement in solving the Juarez femicides. Senator Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico authored the Senate resolution.
The resolution does raise the visibility of this issue, does bring it to the attention of the Mexican government as well as our own government that this is an issue that needs to be addressed. That was the purpose of it, was to be sure that it not be dropping off the agenda when the two countries talk to each other.
Advocates for the murdered women and their families are now turning their attention to the new Mexican administration's involvement in resolving the murders. Olson says it appears to him the outgoing government is washing its hands of a very serious and tragic series of events.
It does appear to me that the Fox administration is sort of tying up loose ends, dismissing cases, closing down the office of the special prosecutor, kind of in a way to be able to present a blank slate to the incoming government.
But Jurado isn't counting on the government to resolve the femicides.
What is important is not so much having faith in the authorities, but faith in the organizations working for justice for our young women.
Ultimately, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights finds justice for the murdered women in Juarez and the resolution of the killings requires attention to the root causes of violence against women. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leslie Clark in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News from KPFK in LA. I'm Mara Bogado.